Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Lots of nice texts about Joe O'Connor there. One texter just says, wow, what an enlightening start to the show today. Go, Joe. Let's keep the quality rolling on now. Comedian Des Bishop, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Brendan?
It's good to see you, Des.
It's great to see you. We actually, in the entertainment industry, you're the man I go further this back with.
Yes.
1994 we first met. I don't know if you remember
94.
That.
94. Listen, if you remember it, you weren't there.
In the Far Side in Cork back back in the
you
A
got
day.
Sense very quickly then. I was a bit of a slow learner.
When we were preparing for the interview, I was saying to your researcher that actually Brendan is probably one of the only people in Irish entertainment that actually knew me when I was drinking. Not that you probably remember, but it was.
And I remember you giving up though, and it was all like, oh, Des Bishop thinks he's an alcoholic. This is ridiculous. She's no worse than any of us. I think everyone was vaguely threatened by that move. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what the problem is, that like now everyone's giving it up now. Everyone's like dry Januarying and everything. And I'm like, hey, listen, I've been there a long time.
Yeah. How long have you been there now?
30 years in July.
Right. But anyway. So you were young when you copped on, yeah?
19, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was more, people always say like, oh, how did you know you're an alcoholic? It was a spiritual, it was a deep pain. It wasn't so much to do with the behavior. It was the hurt inside myself. You know, it's funny.
Really?
Well, yeah. When in the early days, you know, when I used to go to like meetings and stuff and, you know, we thought we were the only ones that were suffering, you know? And one of the great evolutions in modern society is now everyone talks about their stuff. You know, everyone talks about what's going on for them. And now when I listen to like podcasts, I'm like, this is just like a meeting. Like everyone chats like they're in group therapy now, which I think is good, you know, because we used to think.
You were in on the trauma thing like 30 years ago.
Yeah, but we didn't call it trauma. Like I clearly had anxiety, but I didn't realize that until about 10 years ago. But I still have the Gen X thing where I'm like, no, I mean, I'm not like a wuss. I immediately dismissed it. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of these Gen Zs going out about anxiety. No, but what I mean is like there were things that say I would have been like sharing in those rooms that like today would clearly be chatting about anxiety. But the difference was then you didn't feel comfortable chatting about it, like in Geno's and Cork. Yeah. Like if I was with my buddies that weren't going to meetings, I would not be talking about that stuff. Whereas I do feel that today, people are a little more comfortable like having those chats. And as much as we like to joke about, oh, there's a label for everything, the one thing the labels give you is like language to understand it.
Yeah.
You know how I realized I had anxiety? I was doing this, back in like 2016 or 2017, I was doing a show on RTE. You know, Des Bishop's election, and then it was like Des Bishop's Ireland or whatever. Anyway, it was very stressful, you know, not a lot of writers. And I was so stressed, like beyond like the most stressed I've ever been in my life over this show. So much so that I could feel it in my legs. And feeling it in my legs was not abnormal for me, but it was so intense that I decided to Google, why are my legs vibrating, right? And immediately came up anxiety disorder. And then I started reading all these symptoms of severe anxiety.
Hello, and Dolly.
I've never actually been this is literally Google diagnosed me, okay? So if a doctor wants to say I'm wrong, that's totally fine. But I was just like, oh my God, this thing in my legs, which I literally just thought was just like me, is like a symptom of anxiety. And I had it almost my whole life.
You went into the wrong game then, didn't you? Like, because you went into a stressful, high stakes kind of tightrope walking game, like.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, you kind of go back to what's comfortable. I mean, I don't know, sometimes I feel like, because I used to make a joke about my mother, because my mother clearly had it, and I've talked about that plenty, but my mother really was very anxious, right? And so I used to say, you know, she was terrible childhood, bad alcoholic home. which made her amazing in a crisis, because from childhood, she had to manage her parents. So she was amazing in a crisis. I said, what was unfortunate for us was she would create crises to be amazing.
For her comfort zone.
Yeah. That's how she functioned in she almost needed chaos to function.
Okay.
And I almost feel like stand up in a way is a bit like that too. It's kind of like, at least it makes sense here. You know, it's normal to feel like, now don't get me wrong, this could be a little bit of like, pseudo-psychology, my own little amateur psychology. But there is a sense of, it makes sense when I'm freaking out, I'm about to walk on stage, and it's the nerves, and you honestly, you get relief. Like, it is a painkiller. You go up, you do a show, and then you get the adulation. And afterwards is polar opposite to the nerves. It's calm, it's peace, it's everything is going to be okay.
Does it kick in on the stage, or is it only when you walk off?
The calm is immediate. I remember one time I had a terrible breakup. Really, it was a lot going on in my life in a certain year. And like really all around me was kind of a little bit falling apart. And I got on stage because I was in Galway. I remember I was on stage in the Town Hall Theater, and I was halfway through the show, and it was going so well. And I literally said to myself, you're a sociopath. Like on stage in the middle of my set, I was aware of how normal I felt. And I was like, you're a sociopath. You should not have been able to pull this together. Right. But that's the thing. It's like the minute you walk on stage, it's different. But you get relief for a while. Obviously, the torture returns, but you do get relief. And when I say the torture, it's kind of like a joking torture.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll get on to what, you know, we've things we want to talk about. But I'm curious about one thing. The anxiety, right?
Okay.
And I look back now, back then, and I see this big, good-looking, tall, confident American guy, really popular with women and all that, right? So there was anxiety there. You drank to damp down the anxiety then, you think, yeah?
Well, okay, so literally in my early days of, you know, this, you know, like becoming a, like trying to deal with whatever was going on with me, I literally remember saying to somebody, because I was 12 when I started drinking. And by the way, for the record, for people that are listening, we did not plan on talking about this, but anyway, I was 12. My friends were older, and I had always been uneasy in my, like, growing up. Like, more uneasy than a child should be.
Okay.
And I drank whatever I drank that night, which was actually Bacardi rum, in my friend's basement. And I remember going outside and looking at the tree that I normally look at from my house, and for the first time in my life, I actually felt like everything was going to be okay. And that was like, I was 12 and I processed that. I can still see that tree in my head today of just being like, oh, finally, relief. So as much as I never say, oh, I drank to heal anxiety, for example. But the truth was that I got relief that day. And it didn't return like properly, like in a healthy way, until a couple of years of not drinking and truly like doing a lot of work on myself, all in Cork. You know, people always say, why do you feel so connected to Cork? But like, I literally like went through it all there and then came out the other side. And there were times, because I was walking down Oliver Plunkett Street one day, right? I was about 2 years sober. And I just remember thinking like, wow, I am really not worried about anything. And it was like quite profound.
You were okay.
But like it was like a real, now back then, honestly, I was very much in the language of recovery. Yeah. So I was saying that I was having a spiritual awakening. They usually don't happen on Oliver Plunkett Street.
Or in different ways on Oliver Plunkett Street back then.
Here's the truth though. It was real relief, you know? And it really was like, the absence of it was quite noticeable. And it comes and goes, but see, the difference is that again, the language, even in recovery, even in the world where people were talking about mental health, they weren't saying it was mental health then, but even at a time where people were talking about their stuff and their feelings, we didn't frame it in the way that it's framed today. We didn't frame it in the context of anxiety. We just framed it in the context of, oh, you're growing, you know, you're getting better. And that language is also fine too.
There's a classic text in here from Cork. Saw Des at the Everyman on Thursday and he was very good. Very good. That's like as much as you get. They took the time to text in, not to say it was the best show ever. I'll text in and say, yeah, he was very good. Very good. Not bad now.
I felt a little guilty about that show. I felt like we were literally risking our lives because, you know, I landed on Wednesday morning. The show was on Thursday and we drove down and then, you know, the red warning was 2 a.m. So we felt like that was like okay to do the show. But then, you know, no matter what, if people get up when you're on stage to like even go to the jacks, you always think, oh, I've offended somebody or something. But oddly enough, like right around 10 o'clock, a lot of people started getting up. And then when I got off stage, my opener was like, we got to go, we got to go. He's like freaking out because there had been two weather warnings already for Cork. So then I actually felt a little guilty after that. I was like, God, I hope, you know, I think everybody got home safe and it was fine at that time. But
okay.
I quit with
your head on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd be like one of those guys who held a big gig during the pandemic and everyone turned on them.
I know.
Yeah,
and do you know what's funny? The funny thing about that was that March 6th, 7th, and 8th were my last three gigs in 2020 in the Everyman, and there was already COVID in the Cork University Hospital. So I was like, "What? Why are we cursed here? Every time I come in the Everyman, there's like some major natural disaster imminent."
So you left America when Trump became president, not in a celebrity.
I'd already had it booked.
You were on the way anyway.
I was one of the only celebrities that followed through with their arrival, which is actually not, that's not true. But yeah, no, I left right afterwards. So
your thoughts watching it all as a Yank?
As a Yank, I mean, I've been watching it for a long time now, like you, like everybody else. I've been transfixed by this whole thing over essentially a decade now. And I mean, like, which aspect of my concern, speaking of anxiety, you know, they say in anxiety you catastrophize. I mean, for me, I can catastrophize about the whole thing because it looks like there's potential for this to be quite scary, but there's also potential for it to be like a whole lot of nothing, like we'll just have to wait and see. But like, what aspect of it do you want to talk about? Because there's just so much.
Okay, well, here's something. So, do you disagree with everything he stands for? Because there does seem to be a vibe this time among some people that, well, look, maybe we need some kind of a reset. Pity it's him, but maybe actually we do need some kind of a reaction, if you will, to the way things have been.
Yeah, I mean, I get that argument and I hear it and I'm very open to that discussion of, oh, we've gone too far, too woke, or all these things that people say. And like, I would, you know, if back in the rational days of politics, we could cherry pick maybe some aspects of life that we thought went a bit far. But actually, if you were to cherry pick them, you go, well, maybe there was small aspects of that were like annoying.
Yeah.
But the backlash, is it warranted? Because really what I would have liked was we made some progress, maybe, and by the way, I'm just kind of going with this argument that you're saying, maybe some of it went too far, but then all you have to do is just pare back some of the things that you think were counterproductive, but still continue to try to grow. But what it looks like he's doing is tearing the whole thing down in a way that I feel is quite backward. That's the way it feels to me. But I will also admit that, yeah, sure, if DOGE, you know, the Department of Government Efficiency, if they were actually gonna find ways to, you know, make the government more efficient, of course I'd be behind that. But it doesn't feel like that's what they really want. They just want to make it seem like they can tear the whole thing down and recreate it in a new way and it's going to work. But it's just not, because they need money. They need all these things that every politician in the history of like recent society has come up against. They're trying to act like they're not going to come up against those things.
Yeah.
So now it's just all bluff.
Yeah. And people who disrupt massively and have a revolution and everything, the day after, as we talk about in the Middle East, the day after can often be messy because they've thrown out all that stuff.
I think the Arab Spring is a great example because honestly, I remember having such jubilation, like a real sense of hope of like, wow, maybe they can push back on some of these theocracies and that these countries can actually move into the modern era. Because when you meet people from all these different countries, you know, they seem so entrepreneurial, smart, like ready for change. So I remember I had this like naive jubilation that like, wow, this is incredible. And all a decade and a half later, still mayhem. Yeah. So disruption is fine for taxis. I mean, taxi drivers wouldn't agree, but that's a very small thing. You can manage that disruption, but 350 million people, if you disrupt
too much. You need to get that out there in America. Disruption is fine for taxis, but not for 350 million people. Tell me this then. We probably get a very polarized view, or a view of America is very polarized, right? From social media and from the media and stuff like that. In real life, day to day, are people all around polarized with each other?
I was just thinking about this the other day because I was, you know, I was in it, you know, I was on the internet and everyone's so angry, like, especially the way that each side talks about each other, like, it's so polarized now, right? And obviously it's a cliche now, everybody talks about that, but you really feel it, it's palpable, the hate. Whereas, so I actually play golf with a bunch of Trump supporters. I'm outing myself now as a golfer.
Yeah, right?
They're all in their 70s. I'm a comedian, so I'm free during the day, so you got to play with retired guys.
Okay, right? So I'm
in the retired guys group. They love Trump, like almost worryingly so. We get on great. I'm not going to name these guys, but I would say in the last sort of 6 or 7 years since I've been spending more time in the States, these guys are my dear friends. They love Trump and we get on fine. And we have the crack, the traditional crack of back and forthing about our different beliefs. So I got to think that is a microcosm of everyday American society. Most people can get along. Of course, you hear the stories of Thanksgiving dinners where families are falling apart because they disagree. But I think, and you know, the truth is that my neighborhood, white working class neighborhood, Flushing, Queens, all the guys I grew up with have gone Trump. I mean, there's very few that have remained like liberal Democrats, right? They've all gone Trump. I still get on great with them. So I'd like to think that society is not as angry as
the
internet.
So you're here for the 2025 dates of your new show lately, and there are 16 dates still to come all over Ireland. What's the show about, or what can people expect?
I mean, I got very good, apparently. Well, it's called Lately because when I named it, I hadn't a clue what it was going to be about, so I just picked a generic name. Honestly, the last show was about my dead mom, right? So this show is very lighthearted. You know, it's fun.
Which can work well in comedy.
In general, it's like death and anxiety, not the way to go, really, you know? So it's just a fun, lighthearted show. I don't actually talk about Trump that much. I mean, I made a joke in The Everyman about the Musk salute, and that was fine, a bit of topical. But generally, it's not a topical show. A lot of nostalgia. It's good crack, some life changes that I've had, jokes about having kids or not, you know, that type of stuff. But it's really good fun. I was in Kilkenny last night, and honestly, it was a ripper. But I did indulge last night in some real, like, Irish stuff. You know, doing more gigs in America these days, I couldn't get into it. Last night, I was literally doing jokes about, like, what secondary school you went to says about your class. It's nice to be able to just go back there every now and then. So there is a little bit of Irish indulgence too, you know.
Okay, and you're in Thurles tonight. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And honestly, there's not that many tickets left, except the Olympia one was only added last week. So that'll be the big push.
So I think the 28th is sold out in the Olympia, but the 26th and the 27th of February is really in the Olympia.
I think Limerick has a few tickets left.
Tickets left as well. And more details on desbishop.net.
Oh, and I just started a new podcast with John Bishop, which literally just happened.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Okay, two bishops and a podcast.
The Bishop Exchange, we call it.
Very good. Des Bishop, it was great to see you.
Great to see you, Brendan.
Okay, Gormagod. We'll take a break. Road.